we'll go with that. But now Tally is saying this thing is really a star mister, not a metal oxide ballister. Is that what you're thinking, ML?
Roger. This way you'll be sure it should run. If this is a just a protective device, and you got that 100-watt bulb in there, the 100-watt bulb will serve the same purpose. It'll absorb the shock and of the capacitors forming up. And in the meantime, you'll see if the bulb dims down and set may start to play normal, you'll know that device is no good, Paul. Well, I shouldn't say normal, but you'll see the dim down, and in fact, the set may come on partially. That's what I used to see. You see part of the picture come on at that point or whatever, maybe shrunken in or whatever it used to be in those days, but the eye bulge would be lower. And so I know that component, you know, was my culprit. And if I put the component back, I see the bulb light back up bright again. It double confirmed it. But you're going to have to get to the board to pop one pin off. But definitely call over.
I've got one other suggestion for you, Paul. If your digital multimeter has a diode testing mode, the reason I say that is because in the diode testing mode, the digital voltmeters will put out more than about 2 volts, whereas some digital multimeters in the ordinary ohmmeter mode only put out, let's say, 2/10 of a volt, which is not enough to turn on a diode, and you can't use it as a diode tester. So in the diode testing mode of your digital multimeter, or your old-fashioned triplet or Simpson volt ohm milliammeter also puts 3 volts on the circuit, so it'll do the job for you. If you simply put your ohm meter in the diode testing mode across the two prongs of the 110 volt plug, when it's in your hand, not when it's plugged into the wall and the set is turned on, and you measure forward and reverse resistance, if the power supply really has a shorted bridge rectifier, a shorted filter capacitor, and this what we believe is a soft start green resistive device acting as 1 ohm, when you put your digital multimeter across the two prongs of the plug that's in your hand, not plugged into the wall, you should see rather high impedance in both directions, because your meter should simply start charging that capacitor if everything else is working. If your meter shows you a very small number of ohms, like 1 ohm, like the only thing that's in the circuit with any resistance that's left is this thermistor green thing, then it's a strong indication you've got another failure worth looking for. So a combination of this diode / ohm meter test on the plug itself, when the thing is all in the electrical operating mode, you know, all the plugs back in together, that plus the light bulb is a soft start. Step by step, you're going to find out what's going on. Eventually, you may get down to measuring.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Eventually, you may get down to measuring whether or not the filter capacitor, which is probably a few hundred microfarads or more, whether or not it is a short circuit, whether the bridge rectifier assembly feeding that capacitor, whether it has become a short circuit. Step by step, you're going to have to look at each one of these things. For everybody listening to my voice, the audio feed-through of this repeater tonight is much higher than normal, so every one of us has to back off a little bit on the microphone. Howard, I was listening to your signal, for instance, KC2OJO. On the input, you had a beautiful-sounding signal. Through the repeater, you were making square waves because you were a little heavy on the modulation for the way the repeater is set tonight. It's not you, it's the repeater. So we've all got to go a little bit lighter on our rodeo. So I wonder if you need a fill in any of that, Paul. Looks like you've got a homework assignment for you, and whether you do it later on tonight and report back to us or tell us next week what's the next step of what you discovered, looks like you've got a nice troubleshooting experiment going on there. How recent is this set? Since you're taking it apart, I'm guessing it's no longer under warranty. WS2N, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Probably 6 years, I guess. I'll have to buy it from Mr. It's too bad I can't just cut the wire and turn it on. Maybe it would work, but if it's a soft start device, then I'm going to need it. So I'll have to order it from Mr. from, I know Radio Shack has metal oxide ballistas. Maybe they have that component as well. $2. But I'll try to miss it and see what they come up with. I just think it's weird, this drawing. I mean, I couldn't find this on the internet or anything. This schematic drawing, this resistor-like thing with the circle around it. So apparently going by the numbers. By the way, I Googled that. I couldn't find it. I got all kinds of weird things, but I didn't see some mist to come up. But we'll go with that, Dick. We'll try that. And by the way, anybody that's listening, it's not that hard to take these HD covers off. I thought it was going to be a nightmare. I mean, once I found out the trick, it looks like every HD cover I'm looking at now in the stores, and including your LCDs for your computers, they all look like they come apart the same way. It's a little tricky, but interesting, Dick, if you ever want to hear about that.
KC2OJO with another comment.
Yeah, give us your other comment, Howard, and give us half the amount of audio. Back away from your mic a little bit. You're making square waves to the repeater. Go ahead, Howard.
I'll try to back away a bit. Two comments, actually. The first comment is that it seems like that thermistor may be working right, because I looked up the characteristics of the thermistor in the internet, the same place I found it, and it should be 0.7 ohms when it's cold, in other words, at room temperature. And so the difference between 0.7 and about 1 ohm sounds about right, although it still may not be functioning right. The other comment is I would appreciate understanding more about the modulation. Right now, I'm going into my HT through Ethernet. In other words, I'm talking with a headset into one computer. It's coming out of another computer elsewhere in my house, and then going into my HT. And I've been wondering whether my modulation is way too big or too weak, without having too much of a read or know. So would you suggest, regardless of the repeater, I can adjust the potentiometer upstairs later and turn down the modulation somewhat. Back to you, Vic.
Howard, I heard everything you said by listening to you on the input. On the input, your modulation is heavy, but I could understand it. Through the repeater, right now, you're putting out square waves. And some people are going to have trouble understanding what you just said. It was heavily distorted because of being much, much too loud. You need a lot less audio with the process that you're using right now. So you said you were going to back off. You needed to back off a hell of a lot further. That audio was set very hot. Paul, you're misunderstanding something here that we're saying. You're being led to believe that you can't do the next test without replacing that green thing. I don't think you have to replace that green thing to do the next test. Leave it alone for the time being. By way of the digital multimeter test that I described to you on the plug to make sure that you don't have a short circuit in both directions. If you do, don't even proceed. But if you do have a non-short circuit in both directions with your digital multimeter on the plug before you plug it into the wall, then by way of you wiring a 110-volt light bulb, a 100-watt light bulb, so that it's in series with the hot line. So you've got the plug from the wall with some kind of a circuit you're going to make where the one line goes straight to the prongs of the plug that you would normally stick into the wall from the TV set. The other hot wire from the wall goes through a light bulb, 100-watt light bulb, then into the hot wire of the plug on the TV set. You're now using that light bulb as a soft start device. And if the television set under those conditions works correctly, that's a good piece of news. If the light bulb lights it.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
If the light bulb lights at full brilliance on that test, then you know for sure the television set is acting like a dead short and it's simply going to blow a 3 ampere fuse every time you use it, and you're going to have to go downrange further and confirm whether or not the bridge rectifier assembly is shorted, or whether or not the filter capacitor that it feeds is shorted. So, as I see it, the next couple of tests, Paul, does not require the replacement of the green object. I wonder if that makes sense, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, dear Jeff.
Yeah, that, well, okay. Everything except the diode test. Right now, between hot and neutral, I'm getting, what I write down, hot and neutral is 1.9 meg, or roughly 2 meg. I mean, that's not really a diode test, but I put it on ohm, and that's what I came up with. If I plug that in, what will happen? It'll go about 3 or 4 seconds. You'll see the amperage come up very quickly, and then, of course, the fuse blows. So, that's what I'm getting with the fuse in 1.9 meg ohm.
Okay, dear Jeff.
Eric recognized. I've got another question for you, Paul, but Eric first, go ahead.
Let me just warn you one thing about light bulbs and today's modern TV sets. You can get a cascade failure real easy if you don't have enough current at startup, because many of the flybacks require to generate a pulse. What they do is a low voltage power supply, and the power supplies in most of these sets are using switching supplies, and they're weird supplies. You have to generate 2 pulses of horizontal in order to take the short off the flyback. So, if you stick a light bulb in there, make sure that you're going to stick, if it's a set that draws 100 watts, make sure you put a 300 or 400 watt bulb in there. Otherwise, you'll actually wind up frying the switching transistor. Usually it's a FET that runs the flyback, that starts the process, the low voltage supply, kicks it over, runs the medium voltage supply, and runs the high voltage supply. Just be careful about that.
By the way, it's a 300 watt set there.
Yeah, if it's a 300-watt set, how in the world is it running on a 3.0-ampere, 250-volt cartridge fuse, AG3 fuse? Something doesn't quite hang true there. Okay, so you're recommending, since he's got a 3-ampere fuse in the line that's built into the PC board of the set, you're saying use more than a 100-watt light bulb. Use a 200-watt light bulb. And even that, you've got to be a little bit careful, because that's not quite as soft a start as we want, because there's a 15-to-1 impedance ratio of an incandescent bulb, cold versus hot. You may have some further comments on this one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the second end.
It's just from experience, and it's today's modern sets. Actually, from the 80s on, you got to be careful. You got to make sure that there's enough startup current. The bulb's cold. Look, fixing audio amps is where my experience when I was 15, 16. Push pull outputs. Usually, amps would come in with a shorted output, which would then blow up the power supply. But they always put two big fuses in it. But you gotta really have a little caution about that. If you look at the way Sony makes power supplies, and a lot of the Japanese do, they try to save every nickel that they possibly can save. So you can wind up having a cascade effect. Even when you're fixing the darn things, if that horizontal servant doesn't trigger the flyback within the first couple of milliseconds, you see smoke come out of it.
K2KEY.
Mel recognized, like, another question for Eric. Eric, you made it sound like if the power supply is not supplying full voltage, that the flyback circuit can go into a failure mode. Are you telling me that a modern television set connected to the wall during a brownout condition when it's getting less than normal voltage, that the flyback circuit is possibly capable of burning itself up? Over to you, Eric.
Consider this. Okay. Actually, you'll find that if you feed too low a voltage into a set that's already running, okay, and you drop the voltage, there's a protection circuit that usually shuts it down. But I'm talking about the startup cycle. okay, if you start up, and if you have actually really low voltage going into it when you start it up, you can actually, they do get damage. It's not unheard of. But think about it. The way they run these power supplies is you'll have, there's no power transformer in any of them. They'll take 110 volts, feed that in a coil, and they use a transistor to momentarily take that coil to ground, right? And then you have to open it. And if you keep that coil or back, you know, connected back to the return of the power supply, it exceeds the amount of heat that it can dissipate, etc., so on and so forth.
I believe you're describing a so-called shunt boost type switching power supply. It takes the far end of that inductor with 160 foot 7 volts on the input side, shorts it to ground, the inductive kickback, then gives the high voltage you desire. And I think you're saying it can have a spooky startup phenomenon if the voltage comes up slowly. Paul, when you did that ohmmeter test, were you in the normal ohmmeter mode or the diode testing mode is question number one. Question number two, did you measure it in both polarities? In other words, take the two leads out of the digital multimeter, connected them hot to neutral on the first test, and then neutral to hot on the second test. Both polarities, is it still 1.8 megohms? Mel's got some further information for us. K2KEY. K2RIW.
Connected. KJ4JCP link.
Hey, I didn't hear the tone. Yes, huh? Okay, first of all, Eric is right. If they stall out some of those power supplies, what happens is they kill the MOSFET in there. That big power device, one that's mounted on the heat sink. That's when the power supply is stalled out the switching operation, and bingo, that'll kill that device. The symbol that Paul sees on the board, I just looked it up. It's under transient. It's a symbol for transient voltage suppressor. That's what that symbol indicates. Over.
Okay, so it's sort of like a transorb. So it's a transient absorber, and in which case it might be directly across the 110-volt line. And if that's true, and he made the measurement with...
Are you talking about a variation?
Okay, tell us what you believe that device was. Once again, Mel, go ahead.
Okay, I'm looking it up. They show, you know, I have a book on symbols. It's symboled by just a, like a square, a board square. Power supply, it shows you at the power supply for, you know, symbols on a power supply board. If it's just a square, it's a transient, listed as a transient voltage suppressor. That's the way they list it, Dick. Over.
Now, Paul did describe it to us as a symbol right on the PC board that looked exactly like a resistor, except that it had a rounded square around the resistor. It had a rectangular square symbol around the resistor symbol with the leads coming out the end, actual leads, but the four corners were slightly rounded off. I think that is a soft start device. We're getting various people thinking it as a transorb-like device. Eric, KE2EJ, what's your guess as to what it is? K2LAW in the TechNet.
Is this right across the where the power comes into the set?
Yes.
It's an MLV.
Hold on now. When you said right across, there's an ambiguity there. Paul knows that it's very close to the leads that come in. He hasn't traced out enough of the wiring yet to find out, is the device in series with the rest of the power supply, or is it in shunt with the hot and neutral line coming in? He hasn't troubleshot it far enough to know which way it is. Over to you on that one, Eric.
This is...
All right, there's a number of variations on MLV devices. Well, when you really look at them, when you trace it out, you'll find it right across the AC line. It's before the diode. Just let me point out that in most color TV sets and consumer products, there's really a multiple of power supply. The first power supply would take and makes that Ethernet. Sometimes it's a voltage double will make 200 and something volts, or it'll be just a halfway rectifier and make about 100 volts DC. That in turn is usually used to run the low voltage supply, which is a switching supply, which usually can tolerate anything. And then also that'll branch off and run the high voltage supply and the sweep supply, which won't tolerate a lot of stuff. But sounds to me like the device class and MOV devices, and MOVs fail, and they short usually.
Yeah, but we've got an ambiguity here. On this green device with that crazy symbol, he puts his ohm meter across it and he measures approximately 1 ohm. When he puts his ohm meter, his digital multimeter, across the hot and neutral prongs of the plug with the set turned on, he measures 1.5 megaohms. So I'm having trouble believing that that device isn't shut.
Explain to me how you measure it with the set on.
With the set on-off switch turned on, the plug that normally goes into the wall is in his hand, and he's putting the two probes of his digital multimeter across the hot and neutral of that plug, and he measures 1.8 megaohms in one direction. He's about to tell us what it is in the other direction. Does that make sense, Eric? Go ahead.
In other words, when he has the circuit completed to the power supply, he reads 1 ohm?
Negatory. When he puts the ohm meter directly across this green device with that crazy symbol, he measures 1 ohm. It's in series with the fuse, the 3-ampere fuse. But how it's wired into the rest of the circuit through the PC board, he's not yet sure.
Oh, you said it's in series with the fuse?
Roger, Dodger.
No, I didn't get that. That's a fusible resistor.
You might be right, but it has the... When you look up that part number, the part number, as I remember, was CJK/... Here it is, SCI.
All right, I'm sorry. Let's go back to what you said. It's a soft start device, is what it is. But you could call it a fusible resistor, but it's a soft start resistor.
Yeah, the symbol KC2OJO with the code in.
The symbol is SCK/200R7. I think it's a soft start device, and it measures 1 ohm. But now he put his ohm meter across the prongs of the plug that goes into the wall with the set turned on, measured 1.8 megaohms in one direction. Paul, what did you measure in the other direction? WS2N, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Should be the same.
Let me get away for the tone. Okay, I didn't check in the other direction yet, Vic. But the question about the set being on, I mean, these are all, there's no on-off switch. I mean, there's a power button, but I'm sure that power button must click a relay or do something, so in other words, it probably has to have a bulb that's going to the set before you can physically turn this thing on. You know what I mean, Dick? Nothing happens if you push these buttons. It doesn't know if it's probably a relay or some, a triac or something involved with that push button. So, it's just in the mode of just sitting there. I can't physically turn that on or off. I don't think I'm going to see a change if I push that button. I think you need power to the set for something to happen, like to actually call the set being on.
The start button.
When you push that on-off switch, if it is a mechanical object, you will feel or hear a click. If it is an electronic device, then yes, some of the power supply has to be turned on. It has to electronically sense that you close the contacts of that switch, and it gives an order to some other microprocessor that turns the rest of the set on. So,
let me ask you a question, Dick.
Go ahead, Eric.
How old is this set? Because with today's Energy Star stuff, the power switch is usually designed now so that the set will only draw a milliamp, it's that much. If it's an older set, generally Older meaning older than 80s, but younger than 70s, then you will find that there's actually a power supply that runs in the power switch, really turns the switching supply on and off, so it's always growing juice.
He told us it's a 6-year-old TV set. Back to you, Eric.
HDTV, Eric.
How old? 6 years old, high-definition television set.
Yeah, it's got. If you look at the schematic, it's probably got a small DC supply, because it has to sense the infrared from the remote and all that stuff. So it's got a small supply that's always running.
KC2OJO.
Now stand by, Howard. So are you saying, Eric, that when he has the sets unplugged, turned off, therefore the 1.8 megohms he measured really doesn't mean anything, the set was in the off mode? And by the way, we do troubleshooting on the air on the TechNet. This is one of our purposes in life. Go ahead, Eric, see if you got a comment on this one. KE2EJ, KE2RIW.
Let me put it to you this way. You will find some sets that actually have a couple of 0.01 capacitors that run from the power line to a very small power supply that's very low current, because don't forget, all these sets are transformerless. They've got to generate some low voltage to run a little bit of circuitry to set the logic up to turn the set on.
Okay, I hear you. So therefore, the ohmmeter test that I suggested he do looks to me like it is a non sequitur. It's not giving us useful information. I'm beginning to think, Paul, the next step for you
connected
is the
KK4JCP link.
I'm beginning to think,
let me turn that on.
Do I have to stand by while you do that?
No, I keep talking.
Okay. I'm beginning to think, Paul, the next step for you is to run it with a series 100 or 150 watt light bulb, which will give you a soft start. And if the set behaves normally, you've got a lot of information. If your light bulb simply gives you full brilliance, which means the set is representing a dead short circuit, that's another very good, useful piece of information. So let me turn it back to you, Paul, and see if you made sense of all these suggestions we're giving you. And if you get a chance to make some of these measurements throughout the rest of the net and come back to us, we'd appreciate that. WS2N, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, very good. So I'll look, but I tell you what, it's going to be tough. I've got to go out and get a sock for a bulb and all that. I don't have wire that thing correctly, so I don't electrocute myself. Just to get to these contacts, but to put this in series with the fuse, I never saw a... Eurotech is supposed to be a quite good company, but when they started the fuse in, I hope all new TVs and new computers are not like this. They have these, like, they're caps on a fuse. There's no fuse holder, you know? There's little caps on a fuse, and then the caps are wired into the PC, you know, they're soldered into the PC board. So if it blows, I mean, the right way to do it is to actually remove the PC board, unsolder this thing, two wires, and go out and get some kind of identical fuse with two wire clips coming out of it and try to solder it in. I said, well, that's going to be impossible. So I just literally cut the one cap off and had a little wire sticking out the other side. Now, if there's my two connections, I got a new fuse holder and soldered the connections directly, you know, to these, one directly to the cap that was still there, one to the little wire to create the fuse holder. So, it's unbelievable
that's
what they do today. I mean,
you'd
think it would be a fuse holder. Thank you.
So
there's
MGY fuses. Yeah, Paul, do you have a lighting fixture anywhere in the house, a gooseneck lamp or whatever, that has an incandescent bulb in it, a 100-watt incandescent bulb? If you have a light somewhere in the house that's movable, with a little bit of jury-rigging and a little bit of care, you can take the prongs of the plug that normally goes into the wall, wire that in series with the prongs on the plug of the TV set. So there's ways you can get a 100-watt light bulb fixture in series with the prongs of the plug. plugged on the TV set in order to do that test. You think you've got a lighting fixture anywhere in the house that you can temporarily unplug? You're not going to be damaging it, because if your TV set is a dead short circuit, you'll simply be putting 115 volts on your lighting fixture. Over to you, Paul.
Oh, okay, we'll do that. I'm going back with what Mike said a couple of years ago. I remember him talking about, you got one of the porcelain light fixtures, and he's got it made up himself. I was going to do what Mel did, and, with one of those, put the light in, run some wires. I don't have that. I'm just going to go get that. Oh, yeah, okay, sure, just take any gooseneck light and wire it in. No problem, sir. We'll do it.
Yeah, with a 100-watt light bulb plugged into it, you've got a test. Now, be careful. Make sure you've got a nice, clean bench with this jury-rig wiring. Is all going to be hot on the bench. If you want to be super careful when you wire it together, you put black electrical tape around the bare leads of all the stuff you're doing it with, if you know what I mean. But with care, taking your time, I think you can take a lighting fixture and put it in series. Howard wanted to make a suggestion for you. KC20JO, hope your audio is a little bit less hot now. Go right ahead, Howard, K2LIW.
Thank you. I really don't know if the audio is less. I hope it is. I turned the pot down. At least I think it was in the direction down. It's a tiny trim pot. I really don't remember which way it was wired into the circuit. But anyway, I just wanted to comment. It's definitely an inrush type limiter. The pot says power thermistor for inrush limiting. It's SCK series. And every single number is right. The 200R7 definitely is the power and the 0.7 ohms. So I think another way to check it without a light bulb might be to put a voltmeter across the device, turn the set on. It should start out with a much higher voltage across it in the very beginning, and then rapidly go down to zero as it heats up. So that might be another way to tell, by just watching the voltage across it with a voltmeter, set maybe a couple of volts as you start up. I hope it doesn't... Well, the voltmeters are usually over-voltage protected anyway. Back to you, Dick.
Eric, if you're listening, we were all noticing that the audio through the repeater tonight is quite a bit hotter than normal. And Howard turned down his audio quite a bit, but he's still hot. It's still a little bit too loud. One of the things you may have missed, Howard, is that Paul is not able to do what you're suggesting. If he turns the set on in its current mode, no matter where he puts his voltmeter, he immediately blows the 3-ampere fuse. So he can't do that. He can put the whole set in series with a 110-volt lighting fixture and then proceed with the testing. Eric's a little bit worried about the decreased voltage the set will have under those conditions. Will it start up its flyback power supply correctly? Because the light bulb starts off with 15...
It doesn't start with a CRT.
Paul, is there a cathode ray tube on your high-definition 6-year-old TV set? And how many inch set is it? Over to you, Paul.
No, it's an LCD HD TV. They were talking about flyback before. I figured the flyback, but they only have to do with monitors, right?
No, I wanted to know, because it's two different kinds. There's actually a power supply that runs the... They're called cathode fluorescent bulbs in the back, and there's usually a switching transistor that shorts out. When it shorts out, it blows the fuse.
Okay, cold cathode fluorescent tube. That's an S-shaped tube that provides the illumination for the back of the liquid crystal display. And that high voltage power supply, that tube actually runs at something like 80 volts when it is struck. But it requires a 1,500 volts or something like that in order to first ionize it. Isn't that approximately...
Yeah, it's about 800 volts.
800 volts to ionize it, but then it jumps down to something like 60 or 80 volts during the actual cycle, half cycle that it runs. Is that true, Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah, there's different varieties. Some of them are 2 tubes, some of them are 4 tubes. It depends on the set's manufacturer.
Yeah, I still think his best test is going to be this 110-volt light fixture in series, jury-rigged with a hookup wire. And if he wants to be super safe, put the black electrical tape around the connections to make sure nobody can touch anything during the experiment. That's going to tell him a lot as I see it.
Yeah, that'll actually get his low voltage supply to run. But I just take an old meter and check out the switching transistors. You're going to find one in
B2HZE.
Yeah, the switching transistors, for him to test that with an ohm meter on a set of mysterious wiring on a PC board, multi-layer PC board, that's not as easy as it sounds, Paul.
By the way, KB2HZE wants to say something. Let him say something.
HZE, go right ahead. Start with your name, sir. My name is Dick. Paul, you're looking at the website. Why don't you address him? Eric. Eric, you're looking at the website. Why don't you address him?
All right, guys. No, I have to get my microphone ready. I just want to say thank you. And one of the guys here on my system, I have 20 stations listening to you guys. And he's been calling since I tight. And he said from the load side of the TV to the neutral side of the outlet, he was asking a question. If you don't mind, his name is Leland. His call is KF580. But I just wanted to bring it up that we're listening on the side. We don't want to be in trouble. But he wants to know a question. Go ahead and leave it. I'm going to let him drop an SK tomorrow. He would detect it. Go ahead and leave it. Ask your question.
Bad news is that it's going to involve
probably getting to the bridge rectifiers and all, and identifying them. I remember what they looked like when they were actually four identical diodes with leads coming off, and now they're all, you know, I don't know what they even look like, probably little black boxes now. So I didn't get over my head, but we'll take a look, Dick. Thanks for that. Back to that.
To KEY, another comment.
Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, this is KEY. You know, a lot of these boards, especially the power supply boards, they have multi plugs on them. And you can see it, you know, goes off to different parts of the set. What you can do is pull out a number of the plugs. Just leave the one that connects the AC in there. And then see what happens. Possibility that he's got a lot more problems in there than the power supply. It may have gone a lot further because I got suspicion on some of those power transistors that are in there, Dick, from, you know, from past experiences. So sometimes, you know, you can see where the plugs go off from the power supply to different sections. You know, pulling those plugs out and then see if the basic power supply, if you then power it up, you put power in, you'll see the light bulb no longer light bright. At least you'll know that it's somewhere further on, over.
Good idea, Mel. I'm going to do that. That's easy. Can I leave the fuse in? I don't have to. In other words, I don't have to wire this thing in where I wire the fuse in. I can leave the fuse in and just plug in to, you know, to the, plug the light into the incoming plug, like Dick said, right?
Yeah, my strongest recommendation. Let me drop.
So, you know, if you're going to do that, I got a suggestion for you.
And one more thing to say.
Yeah, I'm recommending that he start off with everything wired normally with the fuse in, the series 110-volt light bulb fixture, and then if the light bulb lights full blast and the set acts like it's a dead short, start unplugging things. That'll allow you to do a divide and conquer and find out what is possibly creating.
I have a better suggestion.
Go ahead, Eric.
Since you're talking about a flat panel, you'll find that there's actually two major power supplies. One is 5 volts. One is 12 volts, so sometimes you'll find plus or minus 15. What you ought to do is take an ohmmeter between the 5 volts and ground. Okay, and if you find anything less than an ohmmeter, you've got a problem somewhere. That's the power supply that usually gets turned on by the remote control. So you can actually find the power supply pretty easily, and you'll find 3 or 4 sets of outputs. You may find that the short is there. And then what you can do is follow that line off to wherever it goes and start unplugging things. You can do the light bulb test, but from what you're telling me, the fuse blows, light bulbs can light up. I mean, there's no point. So what you really need to do is dig a little deeper.
I have one more comment.
Yeah, let me first understand what Eric's saying. If he just turns it on right now with no series limiting device like a 100-watt light bulb, no soft start device, he blows the 3-ampere fuse immediately. I'm recommending that he start off with the light bulb. If the light bulb lights full brilliance, and he can measure voltage across the set, he can find out it's acting like a dead short, then start unplugging things one step at a time to see if he can make the short go away. I think that was your suggestion, Eric. Back to you, Eric, for a clarity on that one.
KEY.
Yeah, okay, now, just a second. You can do that. But my point is that really what you're going to do is go with an ohmmeter, okay? And you might as well decide what the battery thing is causing the trigger. So you can do it by the light bulb method. I find that somewhat dangerous. You know, you could just find out where 5 volts comes out. If you got a schematic, it's even better. But if you don't, you'll find a power supply leads off in a couple directions. One's going to be 5 volts, one's going to be 12 volts, one's going to be 15 volts. And with the ohmmeter, you'll find your short on the power supply, and it's not unpleasant stuff until the short goes away. Or do the light bulb method. Go ahead, now.
Okay, now as far as the light bulb method, it's very simple to make up a light bulb, Paul. Get a couple of pieces of wire, wrap it around the neck of the bulb, the screw part of the bulb, solder another wire onto the bottom of the bulb with a couple of clip leads, and you'll have a permanent type fixture like that. That's very handy to have. That's what I got in the shop. Use it all the time that way to substitute. So I go right, I clip right across the fuse that's on the board, because you see the way they put that fuse right flat onto the PC board. You can clip right across it that way, Paul, over.
Yeah, you could also use a socket and a plug and wire it up.
Yeah, but then he's got to put a fuse in, Eric. This way you don't have to stick the fuse in. He can just clip right across the fuse with the bulb.
If you want to do that, I'm thinking about taking a regular AC line cord, hooking it up to a socket, right? Plugging a lamp into it, and of course what you do is you, if you've got a socket, you can wire it up so that you plug the two sockets. You plug one socket to the TV set, and you plug the other socket to the light bulb, and you wire them in series.
I make sure the light bulb is wired in series with the hot lead, not the neutral. And by the way, when you talked about putting the light bulb across the fuse, you meant with the fuse absent. If he simply puts the light bulb across the fuse, he's got to blow the fuse and then light a light bulb. I would take the fuse out and put the light bulb there instead. Is that what you were recommending, Eric? I mean, Mel?
The fuse is blown already. That's what it is, a pain in the neck. I know those fuses, the way they solder them, you know, if you got a pink tail lead on either side of the fuse, and they solder it right down onto the board. So the fuse is blown already. You put a clip lead with a bulb, you know, a couple of clip leads onto a bulb, you make it up. Or like Eric says, but if you can get to the fuse, but then you got to put a fuse in. So they have the all the way back, everybody had that on their bench, you know, light bulb in series with a couple of clip leads for checking switches and things. I mean, it was an element.
That's dangerous.
Test setup.
I agree with you.
This way with the bulb, you always have it. Anytime you got a blown fuse, you leave the blown fuse in there and just clip across the stick over.
That's dangerous to most people, Mel. Maybe not to you.
A piece of information about the fuse. Yeah, he's already replaced the fuse with a fuse holder. And when he puts another fuse in, it simply blows. So with the fuse holder, he has the ability to unconnect the fuse and put the light bulb across the place where the fuse used to be. But Eric is bringing to our attention that you're doing this on the hot side of the line. You've got to be awful careful that you don't touch any of the wiring of that light bulb, because both sides of it, so to speak, are going to be hot. I think that's basically what you're saying, Eric. Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, you know what I have downstairs that I use? And I use it for many things. I fix a lot of stuff, so it's not like I'm fixing one thing. I have a light bulb socket. I have an extension cord, and on one side of the extension cord, which has the fat pin, which is a hot pin, I cut the line cord and put the light bulb socket in there, and it's a permanent thing that I can use. Something comes in, I replace the fuse, plug it in, and I've got my automatic fuse protector.
You could call it a soft start, you could call it a short circuit protector, a fuse protector. It's a beautiful piece of equipment. It's a very safe way to go. As we just found out from Tom tonight, KB2HZE, apparently quite a few other people have joined us, and those people might want to know what this is, so I'll give you a 30-second explanation. Let me drop. Starting in 1982, 27 and a half years ago, something in the New York City area called the Technical Net was formed. And for the last 5 years, you can go to a website and you can listen to all the past Technical Nets by going to amateurradio.tangovictor, www.amateurradio.tangovictor, and you can listen to past Tech Nets. As I said, for 27 years it exists, and for the last lots and lots of years, K2KEY, his name is Mel, and K2RIW, his name is Dick. That's the guy you're listening to. We gather this group of people in the New Jersey, New York, Connecticut area on this repeater on Long Island, 146.85 megacycles, the so-called LIMARC, Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater, and we discuss our favorite subject, ham radio, the electronics, antennas, transmitters, receivers, transmission lines, and the works. So, that's what you're listening to, and it's subjects, the main subject we discuss, with a few exceptions, are the subjects that people begin bring us as questions. Now, the next guy who was on the list was Bill, WB2QGZ. Hope we haven't put him to sleep. He's got a very nice story to tell us about what he did last weekend. Hope you're there, Bill. WB2QGZ, KQLAW on the deck now.
Sorry, Dick. I stepped away. Did you call?
Negative. I'm calling Bill. WB2QGZ, are you there, Bill? Okay, we took a little too long to get to
head on here. I was waiting for everything to stop me, but it's squeaking.
Oh, sorry about that. You got it, Bill. Take your time.
Okay, here we go. WB2QGZ. It's actually, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. I know the last couple Sundays, at least one Sunday, I was tied up in an advanced spot, so I couldn't really get in. I fooled around with this Arecibo EME experiment. A little bit Friday, didn't hear much, but I found out after the fact they were at about 30 watts. I guess Friday. Saturday, really no joy. Sunday is when I heard him. Part of the problem Saturday was finding two sources that would agree on where the moon was, actually, because it was pretty overcast. I finally found one that's actually pretty cool for a lot of satellite stuff in astronomy, and that's called Stellarium. I think it's Stellarium, and if you do a web search for that, you'll find a free download. It's pretty cool for astronomy and stuff like that. Anyway, was using a Gesu FDA-97. I had a amplifier with a gas fed in it. That's all I really had for a low noise front end, and a 7-element handheld Yagi, and that's what I used. Drop it for a second. Had signals intermittently readable out of the noise on CW and on their JT65 data method. Heard none of the sidebands at all. QSL, I guess they were able to decode some of the JT65 I sent them. I sent them two video clips with some audio. One for the CW, which I was able to copy, and one for the JT65, which I was not. Signals were just barely audible out of the noise, and I actually heard the JT65 audio tones a little bit better than the CW. But that's more of a continuous duty method of transmission using different audio frequencies, it seems. So that may have had something to do with it. You have to do a lot less thinking, I guess, or concentrating to try to dig the weak signal out of the noise. Now, the one thing I was trying to sort out, I mean, I did a mean path loss in free space. I know pretty much what their transmit signal was. It was something like a plus 116 or something. I don't have the paper in front of me. But the one thing I was, you know, was when I did this link budget, I was 44 dB short, which I had applied to the reflection off the moon. I wonder if that number is in the ballpark.
You didn't tell me what the 44 dB was with reference to. Thank goodness you gave us the information about Stellarium. Sounds like a very good website to find out about. A 7-element handheld 432 Yagi onto your FT-897 as the rig that did all the work. I think you said you had a gas fed preamp. And some people thought that if you have the right kind of receiving equipment in the right location that's quiet enough, some very simple equipment could rehear that signal from the moon, because they were using a 1,000-foot diameter dish, and eventually when they solved their amplifier problems, they were running some real steam, something like 400 watts or even more of output, as I remember. I wonder, were you hand-holding that Yagi and doing this in your backyard in Massapequa, and at the elevation and azimuth where the moon was? I worry about, you've got some very nice tall trees in your backyard. Was that 432 Yagi looking through those trees? Back to you for any further information on all that, Bill. WB2QGZ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
WB2QGZ, no, the moon was in the clear. It was actually pretty high elevation around the time I was fooling around on Sunday. So no tree. 450 watts, plus 60 dB antenna gain. Path loss for an estimation of middle of between apogee and perigee. And the signal I got down here, which I'll estimate was about a minus 125, maybe, something like that, plus or minus a little bit. In other words, when I do that link budget, the part that's missing is 44 dB, approximately. So I was assuming, in other words, the difference between what the free space loss would be if it were reflecting it. Round trip. So I was wondering if there was any kind of standard amount that the moon would reflect given its craggy looking shape and reverse convex shape as a reflector or its efficiency as a reflector. I couldn't really find or get the radar model of reflection to work too well with the numbers. That was my question.
Okay, first of all, if you try to do a simple link budget, and as I do remember that the announcements for this particular experiment told you that I think they recommended 100 watts of output into a handheld Yagi should do it rather nicely in both directions. So they told you ahead of time what's the minimum equipment, and I can't think of his call method now. There's a guy who I know, Dale Clement, K1, can't think of Dale's call letters right now. Anyhow, he made reception with a simple dipole while he was up at the weak signal conference 2 weekends ago. So if you've got low enough noise receiver capability and a quiet location, a dipole would hear the signal from the moon, and he did. If you do a link budget calculation naively, using the gain of 60 dB for the Arecibo 1,000-foot dish, that is the gain of the dish, and a 1,000-foot diameter dish for 32 megacycles, that's roughly 500 wavelengths in diameter. It's got something like a tenth of a degree beam width. Let me drop. Under normal circumstances, when you calculate what's the one-way path loss to the moon, assuming the moon is a 2,630-mile diameter reflector with a 7% reflection coefficient, and you figure out the free space loss going from the moon back to the Earth, you do a calculation like that, and for the average guy who's got an antenna of finite gain, that's a pretty good link budget. As the antenna gain goes higher and higher, you eventually come down to a half-degree beam width, which means that all of the beam width of the transmitting antenna, like Arecibo, is now looking at a much smaller spot on the sub-Earth point on that moon. As the gain of the antenna increases beyond the point where the 3 dB beam width of the antenna encompasses the edges of the moon, and now you go to a more narrow beam width than that, you do not, per se, get an increase in signal strength. You get an advantage. You're no longer getting the spectral spreading, because the right-hand side of the moon versus the left-hand side of the moon is always moving compared to you. You're on a moving Earth. You're standing in Massapequa on the Earth. You're moving 700 miles an hour to the west as the Earth rotates. And so with reference to the moon, everything's in motion. Let me drop. So the simple link budget gets more complicated when you get an antenna of greater than something like 50 decibels of gain, which is around a half degree of beam width. And they've got something like 60 decibels of gain. So you'll come up with some optimistic numbers. And as I said, they told you how many watts they're running, how many dB gain the dish has got, but you got to be careful how you use it. Also, from my experience, Bill, when I...